This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, two in the books. That means 1 hour still to go. The show, it's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5, 60 minutes on the clock. We'll roll you till 4. Blitz will take you till 7. All you got to do is keep tuned in to the number one sports station in the city of Houston, Texas. That's right, Mo. It's right here, ESPN 97.5.
Is that Mo's members only?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Had a rough weekend.
Yeah, that kept rolling through after
took
Truth.
More
after
shots
Truth
than a firing range.
Woo! After Truth joined us, it just kept going.
Yeah.
He took a few shots at us, but I was like, I get it. You're just flailing about. I understand.
You did it the right way. You just kind of took the high road and let...
I keep high roading it.
Let the analytics speak as they may.
That's right.
Yeah, but then it wasn't good enough, because then he dabbled in a blue check mark from the Bay Area, and that was sudden death. So that's the way it goes sometimes.
Yeah.
You live by the sword, you die by it.
Yeah, didn't go his way.
Isn't next year's, and I don't know if you guys want to wrap up the NBA talk, but isn't next year going to be way more unpredictable, this upcoming NBA season with all the big moves?
But like, see, that's
who's
the
favorite? Who do you think is supposed to be doing good and doesn't end up doing very well?
I mean, the parity is obviously there because we talked about Kawhi basically was controlling the direction of the NBA for the next 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
If he stays in Toronto, then you still got a juggernaut in the West in LA and a few of the Jazz. And, you know, there's some parity still in the NBA. If he goes to LA, it's game over. There's no doubt that if Kawhi had chose the Lakers, it was game over. By choosing the Clippers or choosing to stay in Toronto, he has single-handedly, literally, kept the parity in the NBA and probably did the whole league a favor by making it absolutely interesting.
Yep.
Because anyone can win the West now. I mean, start rattling off teams that could win the West.
And here's the thing you got to keep take into consideration too, Nick, when you said that is the fact that look what the Knicks did. The Knicks are desperate. But the Knicks are desperate. They're not stupid. Because what the Knicks did was they made all their contracts for next year and possibly the season after that, but to be opened up for 2020. Because for all of the huge names that were on the free agency market this year, it's going to be a down year next year by all intents and purposes, looking at who's going to be on the list. And the Knicks don't want to give anybody big money that's coming up next year. But in 2020, you got Giannis. You got a lot of big names. So that's where you're going to see the next influx and push of teams getting ready to create a lot of cap space is going to be right before that 2020 free agency period when a lot of the big real franchise superstar players are going to be available. With that being said, the Bucks just signed Giannis's older brother to a 2-year deal because they're going to do everything in their power to keep Giannis in Milwaukee. I was talking to a friend of mine in New York this morning, and he said, look, the bottom line is the Knicks are a pipe dream if they think Giannis is going to leave Milwaukee. And I said, look, I know the situation there, and he's one of those guys where he believes in loyalty. And the only thing that'll get him to leave Milwaukee is if they crap the bed and they have no chance of winning. If they become the Knicks in the next 2 years, he'll leave. But other than that, he's staying.
Well, how good is his brother? Because if you really want to be good, I mean, we've seen the Rockets do this, right, with some of the bench players that they've added in the past because some of their stars.
Well, they added Goran Dragic's brother because of the fact that they thought it would help keep him until they didn't want him anymore.
Right. Well, and I mean, I'm talking recently, the last 3 or 4 years, they were adding guys that other players on the team liked having around, but they
Bobby
didn't really...
Brown. Bobby Brown was James Harden's best friend in California, and he worked it into 2 years of being paid by the Rockets.
That's the guy I'm thinking of that I couldn't remember. So if you really want to win, do you just bring in any schmo, including your brother, if he's not going to make a solid contribution to the team?
If I'm the owner, though, I would if his brother is not expected to be super good, and you can get a cheap deal, like a super cheap deal. It may be
it's
worth it
spot.
For us. It's an investment you're making for a star, and it's a gamble, and you might lose it.
But it's insurance that you probably should have, because here's the thing. The 15th guy, to your point, it's more essential for him being a locker room guy and a good practice guy, because he's probably not going to play unless it's a dire emergency.
Okay.
But also because of the fact that if you're dealing with the Bucks and it's a small market situation, the panic button, if Giannis leaves, they'll take every bit of insurance they can get.
Here, let me play devil's advocate for a second, though. So now you go out and you say, oh, Giannis, you want us to sign your brother? No problem. He's on the team. He's our 15th guy. But now what happens if Giannis' brother's like, they don't play me. I need more playing time. So now you got to deal with this. This guy wants to be on the court more. You need. Does he deserve the playing time? You could be opening up. Or
you can lead up with it and say, hey, look, this is a 2-year deal. We absolutely love your buddy Giannis. We're giving you this 2-year deal on the basis that we're going to develop your game. You're not necessarily going to get a bunch of playing time, but we're going to develop your game. We're going to want you to work with our coaches, our medical staff, all that other good stuff. And maybe, just maybe, if you show some promise, we'll play you.
Great. That sounds wonderful. But when the two Giannis brothers are hanging out, or the two Antetokounmpo brothers are hanging out by themselves with no managers around, no front office around, and one brother to another is like, man, I wish they played me more.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the agreement was.
At this point, he's Giannis' older brother. If it was going to happen for him, it would already happen. If you look at his numbers in the D-League and wherever he's played, they are average at best, and I'm giving him probably way too much credit. So you're older than Giannis, and you haven't made it already. The fact that you can at least be on an NBA roster for 2 years and say, I played in the league and I got to play with my brother, I think it would be different if he was the younger brother and he's got aspirations and going, I can be Giannis in a couple of years and they're holding me back. But if you're older than Giannis and you are, and it's already passed you by, and already just by the name alone, people, it's pretty hard to take for granted. This is Antetokounmpo, so he's related.
Right.
We should take a shot at him. The Knicks tried it. They kept him around for 2 years. It didn't work out. He dabbled in the D League. So I think from his perspective,
it ain't Seth Curry.
Exactly. This is his way of being able to say, hey, I'm going to be in the league for 2 years, at least 2 years for good, and I get to play next to my brother.
But here's the deal. If I'm a Milwaukee fan, if I'm a Bucks fan, here's why I'm not worried of losing Giannis to New York. Because that front office makes New York City less and less attractive to play in each and every year because of Dolan. No one wants to go and play. Wants to go and play there.
Don't say the front office, because their front office is pretty good right now. You're right.
But
it's the owner that screws everything up.
Right. So, and I just feel like when you have that amazing of a market and you can't get, it should be easy. It should be at least a lot easier to sign bigger stars, and they're not.
It's a mess. It makes the Lakers look good, and that's saying something, because aside from all these players making these moves happen and getting everybody to L.A., and Rob Pelinka actually screwed up the Anthony Davis deal to make sure that they had the room to get a third superstar if they needed to, and was able to backtrack and save his butt. But the Knicks make the Lakers look good because of how bad they are. But just a quick story on Giannis that kind of puts... And I don't know if I've told you this before. I'm sure a texter will tell me if I have. But the biggest thing is, Giannis grew up so poor in Greece.
How poor was he?
That he used to sell bootleg CDs.
I thought you were going
to
say something.
And he and his brothers used to go out there and peddle whatever they could get their hands on just to make a dollar so they could eat.
Damn.
So his appreciation for now that he has money, it's the same way as when the bus stops at the hotels and all the autograph seekers come out. All the players run and go, I'm not signing it because you're selling it. He signs every one because he knows I've been there. I've been through the hard times. So his big thing is it's all about loyalty. And the Bucks stuck with him when he was the 15th pick. He was this scrawny kid and everybody thought they made a mistake, to the point where he's going to be loyal to Milwaukee now because they were loyal to him when he didn't look like he was going to be
a
superstar.
They just better not screw up in the front office. That's all I'm saying. It better not get to a situation where the culture is bad, because I would not be shocked if it gets frustrating enough for him, he'll leave.
I really thought you were going to say Giannis was selling booty, because you said bootleg. Yeah, I was bootleg. Like, what? He's selling booty?
No.
I really thought that was where you were headed with
that. I don't give a shit too about that.
You know what?
But here's the other thing. Here's my other question for you. Okay. Because we're talking about now there's all this parity, because now teams with two superstars have a shot. Milwaukee had to go and re-up Middleton like he's a second superstar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They had to pay, they paid both Lopez brothers now, but they had to re-up Brooke at a bigger deal. So you look at all these deals and you look around and go, as wide open as their window of opportunity was with the best record in the league a year ago, it's almost like it's almost closed now, because their second super, just like I said, who your third best player is going to say a lot about how far you go.
Yeah.
But when your second best player is Chris Middleton and you're looking at Anthony Davis, Paul George, and right down the line, you go, Milwaukee's window, as big as it was, might already be shut.
Yeah. I mean, that Brogdon was a big loss for them. And
apparently he wanted it, and the team was cool, right? He wanted the move, Brogdon.
They because they're a small market, they weren't willing to go over the luxury tax like, say, the Warriors were.
Yeah.
And so they had to let him leave. Once they paid all that money to keep Middleton and Lopez, they didn't have enough without really paying a huge tax fee fine for the luxury tax fine. They weren't willing to do that.
Yeah.
In Milwaukee.
Yeah, so. Interesting stuff. But yeah, I like the fact that right with Kawhi, I mean, there's definitely some parity. You know, you got two stars in L.A. In terms of the Lakers, two stars in the Clippers now. Just a turn of events that I did not expect. I did not expect to hear Paul George be going, you know, requesting a trade after re-signing with them, which we all thought was a surprise, too.
Yeah. Totally shocked.
When he resigned, we thought it was a shock.
Yeah.
Yep. So. A big stunner. I mean, when you think about this now, because now that kind of the dust has settled, all the big names are off the board.
Yeah.
Cousins is in L.A. They also added...
they added Danny Green, Boogie Cousins, and Avery Bradley.
And
today.
Those are all three really big additions for them to add depth to that roster.
Sure.
So, I mean, now you've got... I mean, you could have a... You know, because Anthony Davis will play the four. Cousins will play the five.
Yep.
LeBron, obviously, you know, he's going to be your point forward. Your
and don't forget Kuzma is great backup for both those positions.
Right. And but that's a pretty solid four.
Rondo's back.
Rondo's back as a backup as well. So, I mean, you could potentially have five guys that they run out. It could be Kuzma, LeBron, Rondo, Cousins, and AD. That's a pretty stout five. So when you think about it, now that all the dust is settled, you talk about if we named every team in the West with a legitimate chance to win the West and represent the West in the finals. There's quite a few teams
now. No question about it.
Denver?
Yep.
Is up there. The Jazz.
No question, Utah.
Both LA teams, the Clippers and the Lakers. That's four, right?
Portland
a legitimate chance to represent the West. The Warriors, you can't count them out. Yep. That's six teams for eight slots that could win the whole thing in the West.
The Spurs have gotten better,
but we've all discounted it, but let's be real. The Rockets still have a legitimate chance if the chemistry isn't as bad as we think and they get their stuff together and add some depth to replace what they lost. That's still a good basketball team. I know you're agreeing with me.
But again, if Daryl
the Rockets have a legitimate chance of winning a championship.
If the Daryl would have stayed loyal to what he said, which is I kept my five starters intact without putting them out there as trade bait, I wouldn't be as concerned. Clint's fragile.
True.
You know, PJ was supposed to be the heart and soul of the team. Gordon doesn't care because he's looking to get paid. But
they still have enough talent.
They're still in the mix without question.
That you could look at any of the teams that we named, not named the Houston Rockets, and think, I could see in a seven-game series. I mean, it's possible. They're not the Kings or somebody where you'd be like, but there's six or seven teams in the West that have a legitimate shot of winning the whole thing.
And
in the
with all of the crap that's been going on in the offseason and the chinks in the armor, you can actually just go forward and go, hey, we did keep our five starters together. We've got a nucleus. Our bench, Austin Rivers helps. Let's go forward. But instead, now you want to be knee-deep in this Russell Westbrook stuff. Let's talk about that because I don't think he's a fit.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting thing, too. Let's talk about the bedroom a little bit. Let's talk about, that's not appropriate, sir. AJ's making lewd comments with his hands.
He's trying to tell you didn't flush the urinal again.
Hey, look, if you want to be a champ in the bedroom, and this isn't just about ED, and yes, if you do have ED, pay attention, but if you just want to be better, and let's be real, we all want to be better, go check out BlueChew.com and get the first chewable with the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. Look, I don't have ED, but I want to be better, so I'm getting my order in. That's just how this goes. It's that easy. I didn't have to go to a doctor. I just go online. I get the physician's referral. They tell me what's going on, and I can get my prescription filled online as well. I save money. And with the old school way of doing it, you had to eat an hour before at least, or take it an hour before, I should say. You had to take it on a full stomach. None of that applies with the chewables from BlueChew.com. You can take it up to 20 minutes beforehand, and you don't have to eat. So if you're in the mood and she's in the mood and you guys want to have some nice sex that night, BlueChew.com chewables is the way to go.
Well, the funny thing is when you listen to this station, every time we mention PEDs, it's always associated with being a negative. This time, PEDs are a positive because it's performance enhancing, fellas. Whether you have a real issue or not, it can help you out in great ways in the bedroom, like Barry said. And it only takes a few minutes to connect with a BlueChew.com affiliated physician. And if you qualify, you get prescribed online and quickly. And I say online because it's a big deal. No in-person doctor visits, uncomfortable waiting rooms, awkward conversations, or waiting in line for a pharmacy in which they announce what you're picking up and everybody goes, oh, You're that guy. That's too bad. No, you don't have to do any of that because it's all discreet, including the packaging in which it comes in. No one knows what you're getting and where it came from. And where it comes from is important, too. It's in the United States. That's where these prescriptions are coming from. So you know they're safe and they're reliable. Blue Chew gives you confidence in bed every time. You and your partner are going to love it. You can chew it and do it. And here's a great deal for you guys. You visit BlueChew.com. Get your first order free when you use the promo code SUSPECTS. So make sure you use SUSPECTS when you're checking out. You just pay $5 in shipping, and that's it. BlueChew.com, BlueChew.com, and use the promo code SUSPECTS. And you know what? Chew it and do it. You'll be glad you did.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back rolling through the final hour of the show. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Always appreciate you taking us on the go wherever you may be. And we always, and I mean always, appreciate and like to give back to you, the suspects, that do it all by listening to us on a daily basis. Isn't that right, Barry?
That is right, my friend. And right now, let's give away. I don't know why I'm doing a game show host voice. But yeah, let's do a giveaway. The Australian Pink Floyd show is coming to the Revention Music Center September 7th. Put it on the calendar. This is a one-of-kind show that recreates the look, feel, and sound of Pink Floyd's world tour. It employs visual aids such as lasers, inflatables, and a large display panel similar to Mr. Screen. Let's do caller number 7 to 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. You will win a pair of tickets to the show. To get your tickets, just head on over to LiveNation.com. If you don't win, but good luck.
There you go.
All right.
I don't know. Now you've done the Delilah version. You've come back. You started with game shows. You came back going, all right.
It's Delilah.
This one goes out to Fred, who's been nursing his side piece, hoping she stays with him for another 6 months. For you, we play We Built This City.
Oh, what?
By Jefferson Starship.
Why would you play that?
I don't know.
Okay, you just threw out.
Because it's Delilah. I don't know. Half the stuff she pulls out, I don't know where it came from, but okay.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So there you have that. Okay, so we could put a bow on all the NBA discussions, and we've gotten to all that. You guys,
the one thing we didn't get to was opinions on the Rockets and Westbrook.
Right on Westbrook.
So let's get that out of the way because we still got to get the UFC stuff as well. But thoughts on, should the Rockets really pursue Westbrook?
The only way I would say yes, and it's a very small percentage of where I would say yes, is if Chris Paul is included in the deal, simply because you unload one contract for a younger guy that still has plenty left in the tank. Although, my prerequisite to all this is he doesn't fit because he doesn't fit the system. As long as D'Antoni's going to be your coach and you're going to play that way, from a three-point shooting perspective, from a who-has-the-ball-in-his-hands perspective, you're going to take a guy that's a type A personality that's had rule of the roost in one franchise and put him in a city with a franchise that has another guy that has the same mentality and the same keys to drive the entire franchise. I just think they're going to butt heads. You're going to see Chris Paul, James Harden, part deux at some point. Part deux is going to happen because it's just going to be insert Russ where Chris was. I don't like it. Plus, you'd have to give up, assuming a lot of the people are saying, in order to get the three-headed monster Daryl wants, you'd have to give up P.J. Tucker, Clint Capella, Eric Gordon, and more, and you just completely gut your entire bench on a team that now, at this point in free agency, that can't just go out and pick and choose like the Lakers, Clippers, and otherwise. I just think stay away from it.
Yeah, I think the interesting part is you worry about enough ball to go around. Now, I did see somebody on Twitter that's like, oh, so let me get this straight. No one was worried about enough ball to go around when it was Jimmy Butler. But if it's Russell Westbrook, you're worried about enough ball going around. Here's the thing, though. In Russell Westbrook, you've had a guy that the team has been his team. And it's always been his team. And James leaving OKC and Westbrook got his team. Jimmy Butler's never been in the situation where it's always just been his team. Now, that may be the case in Miami going forward. That's definitely his team. But if he was going anywhere else, whereas some of these other rumors were, the Sixers weren't his team. That was Joel. That's Joel Embiid's team. So that's part of what you have to remember is you're going to take a guy who's he's 1A and he's going to a team with another 1A. You got two guys that don't want to be 1B or 2.
You don't think it was Butler's team in Chicago and at least 1 year in Minnesota?
Chicago, yeah.
When Derrick Rose had his situation with his knee, yeah, for sure.
But it became Butler's team.
It became his team, but it wasn't.
Well, it was going forward after that.
Well, that's a good point. But I mean, in his case, he proved that he could be a two in
a willing.
Philadelphia.
That's the
a
big
willing
thing. You got to be a willing two.
Right. So I don't know about the 1 year in Minnesota. That's probably true too. But I mean, he's still proven that he's willing to be the second option on a team with another star in Philly, or at least for the year or whatever. I just don't know if Westbrook is willing to do that.
And ironically, you say that because one of the teams at the forefront of trying to get Westbrook, if they do indeed trade him, is Miami because they think they can pair him with Butler and they can resurrect that franchise.
Like that would be a mess.
I think it might be too.
But you do have a point because remember when Jerome was filling in for Joel, he mentioned that statistic about Jimmy Butler being number 4 in touches when he was playing for Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. So he didn't necessarily need the touches. So I guess from a statistical standpoint, it looked like Jimmy Butler would be a guy that would fit better because he may be more willing to share the ball than, let's say, a James Harden or a Chris Paul.
Right.
But, I mean,
in Westbrook's case, you know he has to have the ball in his hands. He's got to average his triple-double. That's just what he's going to do.
But how's that going to play with James? And when you're a scorer, not a shooter, you have to have the ball in your hands more because you're going to miss a whole lot more shots, and you got to try and still get to those point totals and all the different stats he fills up. So he's constantly hogging the ball.
Yeah. I think it's kind of a situation where there's not really any big stars that there's not much to pick from. And now you have to make a move because I think deep down they know inside that this team is really good. But as it sits right now, it may not be a championship team now, especially with all the advent of the moves to Los Angeles, both Lakers and the Clippers. So I just think that it's more of a I'm forced to make a move. Because
Nick, don't
this
kid
team
yourself.
Is not. This
Daryl's
team is
looking
not
a, over his shoulder daily because he actually set himself up for this. When he came out and said, we're going to go get a premier free agent in the offseason, and then he said, we're going to go out and be really aggressive on Jimmy Butler, and found out that in the process, he said one day he says he's keeping his starting lineup together. The next day he's shopping 3 of the 5 guys in the starting lineup. All these different things, he's trying to please an owner who really has said all offseason, ever since they lost the final game, I want change and I want it now and we're going to be better next season. So with every move that goes by the wayside that he didn't pull off, that he made the mistake of saying he was trying to pull off, puts more pressure on himself. I only think that he makes the Westbrook trade to save his ass.
Well, the part of the problem, too, with adding, because I feel like Jimmy Butler can play off the ball. Jimmy Butler, although he might be ball dominant, but there are times when the offense does not necessarily have to flow through Jimmy Butler in order for him to be a part of the offense. In the case of Westbrook and Harden, the offense it starts with the ball in their hands. So you got two guys with the same role. And I think that could be an issue. It's kind of the issue right now with Chris Paul and James Harden is that you've got, you know, Chris Paul wants to run an offense, and I don't think he necessarily minds James bringing the ball up. It's just when the ball, to borrow a term from Mikhail, when the ball gets sticky and it's just he dribbles the clock out and then takes a shot. You know, same thing with Westbrook. He's going to dictate the flow of the offense, but the ball has to be in his hands. Neither one of those guys want to be the person that has to sit and wait on the other person to make a decision to give them the opportunity to score. That, I think, is part of the problem as well.
Valid. Okay. So we got plenty more to get to, including this USC match, all the matches from this weekend. You guys are going to wrap that up, talk about that as well. So before we get to all that, I do want to remind you about the good people at BestHotelRates.com. If you're getting ready to plan a trip still over the course of the summer before the kids go back to school, or you're constantly traveling for business and you might be able to capitalize on catching some good rates where you get some brownie points with the boss, well, check out BestHotelRates.com because they've done the dirty work for you. They've got the deals already in place with over 600,000 hotels worldwide, not just in the United States, and they pass the savings on to you. And it's really simple to do. All you do is log on to BestHotelRates.com. You enter your dates of travel, your city of destination, and all the hotel information comes up. Probably a lot of hotels you've either wanted to stay at or you stayed at and spent too much in the past are going to be accessible to you and available, and they're going to be at a much lower rate. And in the process, they also do the dirty work of making sure that your reservation is safe and secure, just like your room is going to be clean, safe, and secure as you want it. And all you do is go to besthotelrates.com. Take it from me. It's in the name. Check them out next time you travel. Besthotelrates.com. We'll be back in 60 seconds with the final half hour of the show. Don't go anywhere. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Jason Herzog back in there for this one. Ariane Celeste is here. Brittany Palmer, Brooklyn Wren also on hand. Game Bread is in the building. And these guys just flapping gums at each other. Any chance they get. The fight clock is brought to you by Modelo. Oh! Oh! Wow! One of the greatest knockouts you'll ever see!
Oh, my goodness!
Hey, we're back, and you heard it right there. That was, what, UFC 239 this weekend?
UFC 239.
And the quickest knockout in UFC history, 5 seconds, including the count out, right?
Including the count out. Like it, when the knee landed, it was probably 2 or 3 seconds.
Yeah.
But when the referee officially pulled Masvidal off, it was 5. Still incredibly quick.
No question. Knockout. And the fact that he didn't take anything for granted. He wasn't done with just the knee. He made sure he got a couple more blows to the grill to make sure that it was final. And he didn't ease up or have any regret about anything he did. After, post-fight, press conference, everything.
The second 5-second knockout that I've seen, there was one in Legacy back in 2013. Mm-hmm. Jonathan the Hulk Harris. There's actually a video on the Cage Door YouTube that we captured. And it was kind of the same thing. It was a striker versus a wrestler. The wrestler, actually, the guy went to, he fake high-fived Jonathan Harris. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Harris didn't fall for it, so the guy puts his hand in the air like he wants to touch gloves and then shoots. Harris hits him with the knee. 5 seconds, he was out. Same exact thing. I mean,
wow,
it reminded
he deserves it if he was trying to trick him.
Yeah, yeah. It was a dirty pull.
And now John Harris is doing sideline for the Texans.
No, wrong Jonathan Harris. But that was a 5-second KO in Legacy. This was crazy because when Harris did it, he just walked off. Now, hey, Masvidal.
Yeah.
He doesn't like Ben Askren. Then again, a lot of people don't, so I don't think there was any... Nobody felt sorry for Ben Askren in this case, but
yeah, a lot of people label him as a D-bag. And I think it goes back to his UFC debut with Robbie Lawler. He was clearly losing that fight. Robbie Lawler clearly was not out when Herb Dean pulled him off and he got the submission win. I don't count it as a win, but it's an official win for Ben Askren, and he wasn't classy in when he won at all.
No.
And now all these Ben Askren fans are mad because he's saying stuff about his ethnicity and his culture and everything. And when he gets knocked out, no one feels sorry for him. And everybody's like, oh, well, Jorge Masvidal, he's not classy.
That's the thing. And I loved Jorge's press conference. He's talked about a lot of stuff. And he addressed that because people were like, well, do you feel like you should have stopped punching him? Do you think that it was dirty? Do you think you shouldn't have talked trash? He got asked all that. And I don't have a problem with what he told people.
I saw some criticism. People say the punches weren't really necessary. Maybe
they were super necessary.
Why were they necessary?
What do you mean, why were they not necessary?
Because he was already knocked out at that point.
But the referee hadn't pulled me off. And my job is to hit somebody till the referee pulls me off. So to those people, I would say maybe don't watch him and maybe go back to soccer.
I saw some other criticisms perhaps of your celebration afterwards. Any regrets at the celebration or your behavior in the cage afterwards?
Man, there's not too many people that I've disliked. I have over 50 pro fights, and he's one of them, you know. He talked about my manhood, talked about my culture, my ethnicity. Where do we draw? Why do certain people get to do stuff? You online, so you could do anything. Everything is cool before a fight. You're allowed to do and say whatever you want. Like other fighters are not doing, talking about people's religions, wife, even kids. That's cool. But after a fight, I'm not allowed to showboat and rub it in your face. So you and guys like you could see it and be like, maybe I don't talk so much. Because when I cross one of these real motherfuckers, they're going to make me pay for it, man. They're going to embarrass the shit out of me. And it's not over for Ben either. He still has to deal with me. If I see him at Whole Foods, I'm going to still slap that dude up because I don't like him.
That's all world.
That's my favorite part of it. But he makes a great point. So there is a difference in normally selling a fight, right? Like, hey, you suck and I'm going to beat your ass. Oh, yeah, I suck? No, you suck, pal. No, you suck. oh, well, we're going to settle this in the cage. And then one guy gets beat up and the other guy wins and they shake hands and they go their separate ways. And that's just normal in the sport. It's personal attacks, and it's not new to the sport, but you know, guys like Conor McGregor will take personal shots. And
he'll also say that it was my issue with Conor. He'll also say, after the fight, man, I don't talk no mess. You should congratulate. No, it doesn't work like that. Because you said all those things and the other person beat you doesn't mean they have to stop for you.
Exactly. Just because you want to take the high road because you won.
Yeah.
That doesn't – listen, if you talked about me, you know, questioning somebody's manhood is always going to happen in the fight game. That's going to be the thing. But when you start talking about people's family and ethnicity and religion, which was the case with Habib and Conor, when those type of things take place, that goes beyond just regularly trying to sell a fight. Now you're just attacking a man. And I love his point about you can be a keyboard warrior, which is essentially what he's saying. But when it comes time and you catch that ass whooping, I'm going to let you know. I have no problem with that at all.
I mean, he also said.
You speak Mike the truth. You really do. Because you can hide behind a keyboard only so long.
Yeah, that's
and,
very nice.
And you, when you catch Mike in the Whole Foods, if his people aren't working on a deal with Whole Foods right now, there's something wrong with them. Because they should be. They should maximize that, and he should too, and go, you know what? You don't have to catch me outside. You can catch me at Whole Foods outside aisle 5. I'll be here for the next 3 Saturdays.
But I tell you what, though. A guy I followed for a very long time, never gave him enough credit for his ability to trash talk, because that press conference,
boy,
was a lot of fun. And my favorite part about Masvidal is him making fun of Ben Askren and the fact that he's such a wrestler. And he kept on saying, "Well, he just wants to see my crotch. He just wants to see." And it's so funny. Listen, probably 4 or 5 times in this press conference, he used that word, and it sounded like this. It was hilarious.
Not just the Robbie Lawler fight. His whole career, he's always like his face is a magnet to crotches. And if you want to try to touch my crotch and you're a dude, there's a heavy toll to pay, man. There's a heavy toll. This crotch ain't for dudes. I mean, I'm not fighting a guy that intends to punch me in the face whatsoever. He's not a mean guy. He doesn't want to punch me in the face. He wants to hug my leg and put his face in my crotch. As soon as he was acting like he wanted to come forward, and I put my hands behind my back and like signaled to him, and he was like, "Yeah, for sure, I'm putting my face in your crotch." I was like, "Oh, I got you, bro. For sure, I got you, bro. You're such a fish, man.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
You got it."
That is so outstanding. And let me explain it just for some folks that don't know what he's talking about. The wrestlers, there's such a thing as called like a high crotch, and it does require you to put your face in certain areas kind of near the crotch. He may be exaggerating a little bit, but in a way he's not. It's just great that he would go out and use that as part of a way after the fact to just trash talk this dude that he absolutely destroyed in the cage. I don't feel sorry. Now, somebody texted us and said that in an Ariel Helwani interview, Askren basically owned it and said he probably deserved everything.
He said it on a tweet. He tweeted it out the very next day. So he said,
"Oh, well, good. At least he owned it."
Yeah, it was. First, he said, "Well, that sucked." That was after the fight. And then the following day, he goes, "Some girl was defending him on Twitter," and then he quote tweeted it and said, "You know what? I probably deserved it." So, yeah, I think the only problem that I just wanted people to know, like, it doesn't make Masvidal a classless fighter because he did that. That was my whole issue. And then the other issue I had in the press conference, they asked Masvidal, what did Dana White say after the fight? And Dana told him to be nice to Ben Askren.
Uh-uh.
No.
No. No, player. No. Nope. Sorry about that.
If I'm Masvidal, I'm not being nice to you.
No.
I don't have to be.
You earned that ass whooping and the trash talk that followed it. You absolutely earned that. And you know what? Sometimes you go out on your shield, and that's what happened.
Yeah.
And I've said this to you guys before. The one time that I was actually in the place to see how these fighters interact all the way up until the fights begin and then how friendly they are after, there is nothing like this kind of thing to add more to get people to realize how great this sport is and how far it can go and be, because of the fact that there isn't this whole buddy-buddy after fights, that there is some true, you know, real bad blood
between
fighters
that
can really be played upon. So it's not just promo speak before a fight to sell tickets, as we've seen in boxing too. It's really bad blood, which creates a lot more interest and a lot more people that want to put eyeballs on the product.
There are a lot of classy people in the sport that can talk trash leading up to it, not get too personal, but still talk good trash, fight each other, and then shake hands afterwards and mean what they said leading up to it. But then when it's over with, it's over. It's kind of like anything. If you have a beef with somebody on Twitter or whatever, a lot of times once it's squashed, that's it. There's no hard feelings. But there are cases, John Jones and Daniel Cormier, where they just don't like each other, and that's never going to change. And this is one of those times, and it really makes for some compelling fights. And you'll see, I mean, this very well could, there very well could be a rematch. I could see this fight happening again.
Well, and I think you're totally right, because I think Dana White wanted Ben Askren to win. It was pretty obvious that in the event that Ben Askren won, he would have got a title shot. But if Jorge won, he wouldn't commit to giving Jorge a title shot. So
I mean, he wrecked him.
Now, I ask both of you, because of your expertise in this sport, if it doesn't happen within 5 seconds, if a rematch happens, is the outcome any different?
I think so. Absolutely. You're saying
you still have to deal with his wrestling, man. He's a grappler for sure.
Yeah, you're saying if they do get a rematch, does the same thing happen?
No, I'm not saying that it happens the same way, but is the outcome different?
As far as the winner?
Yes.
Yeah, I think I would probably pick Ben Askren to win again.
I was tempted to pick Ben in the first fight, to be honest with you. Ben is just, when he gets, when he grabs a hold of you, he's something crazy in the grappling world, like 38-0 or something like that.
When you, go ahead, sorry.
But like when he's able to grab a hold of you and be relentless about it, like missing a takedown is not discouraging to a guy like Ben Askren. He can just follow up with it and take you down eventually.
In the fight game, in MMA specifically, wrestlers more than any other discipline can dictate where a fight takes place. And when you've got a guy, a lot of times guys that aren't good on their back, and even if you have two wrestlers, you know, guys can impose their will more often if their background is wrestling. And so you always fear facing a wrestler if you don't have a good ground game or a good background. But a guy like Ben Askren is on a whole other level. It's why guys like Daniel Cormier, no one wants to fight, because he's tough. He can take a punch. Like you said, Nick, he's not going to get discouraged. So this may happen once, but he's not going to go in and make that mistake twice by just rushing in, head down, shooting right from the jump, from the bell. He probably, if it's any, walks his way in.
Yeah.
You know?
If it's anything that's going to teach him to mix it up. Because before the fight, he's like, oh, I already know what I'm going to do. I'm going to just take him down. Yep. I'm going to take it down. I'm going to get him tired. I'm going to beat him up. I'm not guaranteeing a knockout, but I'm going to take him down. I'm going to wear out. You're going to have to mix it up now, bud, because you might get a knee or an elbow or a punch to a face. So. But it was an interesting, I mean, that was just, I was so shocked. And if you saw some of
everybody
the reactions,
was shocked.
Like there was fighters backstage watching in the middle of their interview. They would like, oh my, you know, they would just have these unbelievable reactions. So,
and you gotta, before we get off of UFC 239, shout out to Amanda Nunes.
Yeah. Yeah. She does it again.
She's a badass.
She does it again. Darren
she
Rovell
said she wanted to do it with a kick too.
And she did.
Yep.
Beat Holly Holm at her own game.
Yeah.
Yep, that's what she said. That's exactly why she wanted to do what she did, and she did it. So kudos to her. And it made for one hell of an eventful.
That was a good fight, man.
UFC
that was a good fight card. I don't know if you guys have the ability to watch it on archive or a replay, I think y'all should do it.
Somebody on Twitter had asked us, Tristan Wade said, what was Todd Duffy's knockout time?
Seven
seconds.
Or eight. Yeah, 7 or 8. Yeah,
7 seconds. Or eight. I thought it was seven.
I think it's seven. I think it's seven.
Our knockout time's in about 17 minutes.
That's right.
So we've got one segment to go on the show. We'll take it till 4. Blitz will take it till 7. All you do is keep it tuned right here to ESPN 97.5. All of the lights on over every boy and every girl.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Here we go. Final segment of the show. Compliments of the fun, police. We've got till 4. Blitz has got till 7 to take you home. Or on the way to your destination.
You watching the Home Run Derby tonight?
I mean, because Bregman's in it, I'll peep it. Yelich backed out last night because of a back issue. He's going to play in the game. If you missed it, Verlander is your starting pitcher. So from an Astros perspective, good and bad. Good that he's starting the All-Star game. Bad because now it pushes his first start post-All-Star game and All-Star break back to Sunday. But AJ Hinch has talked about the fact that he wants to mix up the two power pitchers and get Miley in between the two of them to make sure that it's not, because he thinks power 2 days in a row, hitters get a chance to kind of get used to the velocity and it's easier to hit one if not the other. Putting Miley in between him and also a lefty in between the two righties might make some sense.
I'm going to watch it because there's nothing else on.
Good point.
Unless, and I have a big caveat on this, and you know what it is.
Is that that song about the songwriters? Or, I mean, that show that you watch it with the songwriting?
Caveat?
Yeah. So is that on tonight? Like, you wouldn't watch it because of that? Because you like that
if
whole...
Chris Berman is calling it.
Oh. You're out?
I'm 100,000% out.
But you like that Kitty Pop show where they're redoing songs.
Yeah. I think that's Tuesdays.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah. Even if so, I can always...
tape it?
I got a question for you guys. Is this bad for Yuli, considering the break is happening right in the middle of this?
Boy, I think so.
Is it ever? If I'm Yuli, I just want to keep playing.
Yep.
And can we talk for a second about your Yuli Gurriel slander? Because I've seen several people on Astros Twitter loving to, I remember when y'all talked bad about Yuli. Don't think I forgot all the slander on Yuli. You guys all dogged Yuli. Get out of here, you haters. Hey, that dude earned his slander and the hate that he got because his first 2 months of the season were awful.
Yep.
I tweeted it out and I looked at his numbers real quick. I think he had 4 home runs and 20 RBIs a third of the way through the season. So if you're telling me that a guy like Yuli, who you count on to be a big run producer in the middle of this lineup, projected over a full season going 12-60 for the year, that's what he was on pace for before he got hot. If you're telling me that that was okay and you didn't think that was worthy of slander, then you don't know baseball and you should stop talking.
For the year? Because I tell you this, it seems like he has more than half of them in the last week.
He's got 9 in his last 11 games.
Well, that tells you all you need to know.
Exactly.
Because when you look at the numbers, you say, well, when based on what his totals are for the year, he's been, I was going to use a bad term, but he's been dog poop terrible for most of the year.
Yes.
And he's gotten really hot at a time when they really needed him, and hopefully he stays that way. So, Nick, to answer your question, I'm with Barry. Absolutely. You wish the All-Star break was happening at any other time because he is just absolutely, aside from Mike Trout, he's probably the hottest hitter in baseball.
Yuli's March and April, 1 home run, 9 RBIs, hit .240. Okay? Struck out 14 times.
Oof.
His May... 3 home runs, 11 RBIs, struck out 12 times, hit .291. But when you combine those, 4 home runs, 20 RBIs, 26 strikeouts, a third of the way through the season.
2 months in.
That's a really bad season up until then. And his June, 4 home runs, 17 RBIs, is July already. Already in July. We're on July 8th, 6 home runs, 13 RBIs. Boom. So he has really turned it on. But guys, settle down, Astros Twitter. He earned the hate and the mean things that everybody was saying about him because he wasn't playing well. He just wasn't.
I mean, he wasn't Tyler White, but he wasn't playing well.
No, he wasn't. And especially, you weren't really counting on Tyler White to produce, numbers like Yuli has in the past. You were counting on Yuli as an integral part of this offense to continue to be an integral part of this offense. So
yeah. I was tempted, though, when the bases were loaded and Tyler White was at bat, to tweet out something very inappropriate, but I caught myself. You would have been proud. Oh, yeah.
It had nothing to do with the picture I sent you guys this weekend, did it?
The tattoo tweeting.
Oh.
Remember?
Oh, yeah, yeah, the fan remember, Barry, the one that started all of your beef with Mo? About if he hits a grand slam here?
Oh, yeah.
And she screenshotted your little DM.
Yeah, I do remember that. Right.
That sounded like you were a creep. And you're not a creep.
I don't know why you... all right.
Just wanted to end the show on you being sounding
settle
like
down, a... Adam Ferrara. Chill out over there before I get one of my MMA
Easy
fighter
Mo
friends. Get one of my fighter friends to give you a shout.
I wanted to tweet out something so bad, but
about that?
Yeah.
Or about Tyler White?
About that, about the whole tattoo thing, but I refrained from doing that.
Well, good for you.
Well, at least he was charting pitches Friday night behind home plate. Tyler White.
See? That was so funny. You were like,
I know when you texted me, I'm like, what are you talking about?
Because you were at the game and Barry wasn't. And I was like, hurry up. Y'all got to turn on the broadcast. Tyler White is sitting in the Diamond Club behind home plate.
Man, there was some dude that was.
He was a big dude. He was like Tyler White.
Easy 4 bills with a beard. And I was like, Joel ain't right.
And then I screenshotted it, sent it to you. I was like, oh, Lord, it's on now.
Yeah, he ain't right at all for that. It's going to be a fun second half.
Yeah.
I don't see the Astros faltering.
No, we've said that all along. The bigger, you know, here's the thing.
They had a rough stretch, but, you know, 7-3 in their last 10 and back to 7.5 game lead over the A's. Rangers are fading a little bit. Now 9 back of the Astros.
And you got them coming out of the break, so you can actually maybe put them to bed if you can just take care of business in Arlington after the break. But the bigger thing is Ken Rosenthal is now reporting the Red Sox are going to be buyers, not sellers, and they're going to be after starting pitching. If that's the case, it goes back to what you and I talked about in the last week or so, which is it behooves Jeff Luhnow to be ahead of the curve and start trying to get the pitcher he wants now so the bidding wars aren't as serious. Yeah. If the Red Sox are in, and we were thinking they might be out, now you've got Red Sox, Yankees, and others that are going to be clamoring for pitching and the price is going to go up. Act now so that you can get the guy you want at the price you want instead of getting last-minute deals where you're going to overpay.
I'm with you on that, man. You've got the window is narrowing every day, and the All-Star break might be a really good time to reach out. And I don't think Jeff Luhnow's sitting idle. I think he's obviously out there exploring the market as like you said, the Red Sox and the Yankees and everybody else is. It's who's going to offer the best packages for the arms that are available. And this is also why they moved up and eliminated the secondary trade deadline at the end of August and said, you know what, July 31st is the only trade deadline. Because now you've got teams that have to make that decision. They didn't have to make it by July 31st. A team like the Red Sox, who, you know, they're not out of it by any stretch. They're 9 out in their division, so they're you know, 6-4 in their last 10 as well, starting to make a play. They're 2 out of the wild card, but that's going to make them make a decision. That's going to make the Angels, who are only 6.5 out of a wild card, hey, do we think we can win this? Do we think we can make a run for a wild card? Rangers are the same way. They're 3 out. So this new trade deadline is going to make a lot more teams either go all in and make their own moves, or it's going to make teams decide that they're going to be traded.
And you got to crap or get off the pot, because if you're Tampa in the past, Tampa's like, okay, we're in it now. If we're still in it in August, then we'll see. But now it's like, no, you don't have the luxury of waiting an extra month. You either got to go for it now or just say take your chances and then run the risk of people being hypercritical of you after the fact going, you know what? You guys balked when you had a chance to get a guy to add it at the deadline that would have helped you. It's on you.
This is crazy. So when you look at the American League, there's, if you don't count the Rays and Indians, who right now are in the driver's seat to make the wild card, you look at how many teams could make a legitimate run at it. And if you cut that off at about 6-7 games back, there's the Red Sox, the Rangers, the Angels, and the White Sox. And everybody else is at least 14 games out. Mariners, Jays, Tigers, Royals, Orioles. Dude, over in the National League, the only team that's absolutely out of it is the Marlins at 13 out.
Yep.
Every other team in the National League is 7 games or less.
Even the Pirates.
From a wild card.
Yeah.
The Pirates are 2.5 games out of the wild card.
Right.
I mean, the margin of error. So, and remember, trades aren't just per league. You can, so there's a legitimately, everyone in the National League not named the Marlins is in it and could be players at the trade deadline.
Could be clamoring for pitching, yeah.
It's absolutely insane. I mean, across the board, there's a lot more buyers than sellers this year. So the point you keep hammering home about that, never more true than this year.
No doubt about it. Also never more true than the fact that, hey, you need to be listening to The Usual Suspects. And if it ends in a Y and it's not Saturday or Sunday, we'll be with you. So you should be with us. So that means when Barry and I and Nick check out of here, you can check in tomorrow and every weekday, 1 to 4 p.m. right here on The Usual Suspects.
Yeah. Hey, guys, real quick before we get out of here, I want to tell you about Innovative Lasers. My results after 1 week, absolutely crazy. I lost 6 pounds and 2 inches off my waist in my first week. And they'll tell you you'll lose a half pound to a pound per visit, and you'll lose up to from 3 to 11 inches guaranteed in your first 2 weeks. Take that half pound to a pound per visit. Right now, after 5 treatments, I'm losing a pound and a half per treatment. I've lost 8 pounds in 5 treatments. I could not be happier about this. You guys need to check this out. They've got 5 locations all over the city, like 1960. They've got one in Clear Lake, Katy, Sugar Land, the Galleria. Anywhere that you need to be to get to these treatments, you need to check it out. They use a Zorona laser, so there's no needles, no incisions, no recovery time is needed. It's painless. All you do is you're laying there on a bench and you're losing weight and you're getting slimmer and sexier. And right now they've got a special for ESPN listeners. Normally it's $2,400, but for ESPN listeners, you get half off and they'll throw in 3 additional sessions absolutely free. Be one of the first 100 callers right now. 281-888-3094. 281-888-3094. Or check them out online at InnovationLasersOfHouston.com. Don't go anywhere. Blitz is up next. ESPN 97.5.